Three,
two, one.
Anthony Darby.
Chuck Hen.
We are here with Jill Franquelli from
Mary Jane.
Mary Jane. Jill, thank you so much for coming on our podcast. You have been an influencer and kind of on the front of cannabis advocacy since I remember, you know, us opening our drawers. So thank you so much for your strong advocacy. Thank you so much for coming today.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So for some reason, someone doesn't have social media or hasn't seen one of your amazing magazines. Tell our audience exactly who you are, you know, who you are and what you guys do.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Jill Franquelli, and I am Mary Jane. It's a magazine that comes out in the community monthly, and it's focused all about cannabis in Maryland. We want to stay hyper-local and really spread the stories and really write the history of what's happening in Maryland cannabis. And we have a social media account that goes along with that as well, kind of following the journey as we meet with people in the state to learn more about them.
Am I incorrect in calling it a lifestyle magazine?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
When I saw it, it shows different people telling their stories. You know, some of these, a lot of patients that we have, they have these silent diseases.
Yeah.
And a lot of them have diseases that and issues that are not super well diagnosed, and they're also not well publicized. And I think a common thing that I find is when they try to explain their story, they oftentimes feel like an outsider because there's not this large community of folks that have this rare symptom that they have, or people don't understand, well, how come she has fatigue all the time? And so your magazine, I remember one of the things that I took away from it was it was an issue where folks had these different silent diseases, and you've done a great job of featuring Eric Stamper and doing a lot around the veterans issue. So is that the goal of the magazine, to kind of share those stories? Is that what we should be seeing more of?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, something that's been reaffirmed to me over and over again is the power of story. When we understand someone's story, we understand them, we're kinder to them, we're gentler to them. But it doesn't always work when I tell my story to someone else, especially people who are stigmatized maybe because of cannabis use, or maybe because they have illnesses that you can't see or that you can't experience. And so what I have even realized is, like, my mission is to share that story of some individual in a beautiful way with a beautiful writer, beautiful photography, because somehow that legitimizes what that human went through. And so that issue you spoke about, the invisible pain and illness issue, that's actually very near and dear to my heart. I grew up with a mother who had many of these diseases that, I mean, I could talk about forever, that trauma causes. And, you know, I saw people didn't believe my mom. I lived not believing my mom. You're 14 years old. You want your mom to do something for you, and she can't because she has fatigue. What the hell is fatigue? All I know is I'm a bratty teenager. And so it has been, I think, redemption for me for some of the things I think I did with a parent that had these illnesses. But then also to give people a voice. That's all anyone's ever looking for, is some acceptance and some empathy from others. And we can do that by writing a story about it.
That was really well said. And I think a couple of things come to mind when I hear that. So one is, you can tell that you come from a background of marketing and communication, and I would like for you to touch on that. But B, when I hear that, I find it so true that we have Brandon on our team and does a lot of our creative stuff, but if we make a video about it or we get a compelling image and share a quote, for some reason, when it's done in a captivating way, in a way that content can be captivating, even our podcast in some ways. Eric Stamper came on our podcast and shared his story. And when Brandon chops it up and plays you a 30-second quote in a clip, and you watch that and you go, damn, like, that is really impactful. I know veterans struggle. I know 22 veterans kill themselves every day because of PTSD and mental health. But when you see that 30-second produced clip, or you see your magazine with these really powerful imagery, and the photos I thought were really good, and then to your point, your writer gives these beautiful dictation of these stories, it's an ad. It's an advertisement. It's more than just reading something. It truly is compelling. And I think part of that is what gets me. If you know anything about our dispensary, we are truly focused on the medical side of things and changing patient outcomes. And I've used cannabis for all my life, adult life, over, you know, basically around 19 and on, and always felt like an outcast and an outsider because I didn't necessarily vibe with all the countercultural side of cannabis. And my friends that I was competing with at work didn't understand how I could smoke weed in the morning. And that was what got me going. And that's what got me to the office an hour ahead of them. And I was able to compete and grind. It wasn't this thing that was going to put me on a couch to play video games all day. So telling these stories and putting a face to them, I think it truly is important. So how long have you been doing Mary Jane? And then tell us about cannabis use and tell us about your professional marketing before you started applying it.
Absolutely. So Mary Jane and Marilyn started last April. Our first issue came out in August, and it's been rebranded to Mary Jane, which the first issue will launch in the next like 60 days.
People are super excited for that right now.
I am too. Like I've missed the stories. And so, I'm excited that we'll be back there doing that. As far as like my cannabis journey, I actually haven't been a longtime cannabis user compared to many people. It was my brother who actually turned me on to it. I was 33. I'm turning 41 this week. And I was having a panic attack. And my brother and I, like my mom, we watched someone become addicted to opioids because of illnesses. My brother, I think, watched and saw maybe a similar path because of anxiety, because of depression. And one day I couldn't get out of it. And he rolled a blunt and said, "Try this." And I did, and I was, just to add more frame of reference, I grew up Mormon, and so this was big
time. That,
big time. So I was totally freaked out and just sat there, eyes wide open, like waiting either for lightning to strike.
Joseph Smith to come down himself.
Something was about to happen. But then what I noticed was, I just felt okay. Like I didn't get that full like euphoria feeling, but I definitely felt me come off of an edge that I hadn't felt in a very long time. And so it kind of piqued my interest. I was like, oh, hold up. What is this all about? And then I took some time, and this is where the real change from a very corporate marketing life that I had, which I'll go into. I realized my wrong judgment on my brother, because he had used cannabis since he was 14 for IBS. And my entire life, I just looked at him
trying to get high.
And then I just realized, okay, so this is something that is a much bigger deal than a bunch of teenagers just smoking out of a bowl.
And that's a realistic expectation too. Like, if someone is listening to this podcast and you struggle with really bad anxiety and you're having panic attacks and you're looking at cannabis as a tool, it's going to take the edge off.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of work to do after the edge is off. It's not going to make everything go away. But as I struggle with really bad anxiety and depression sometimes, and I find that it takes the edge off and allows me to take a step back and then go through the coping mechanisms of healthy. It's so good for me to take what seems like unbearable down to bearable, and then I can kind of handle it. So go ahead.
Yeah, it's not... And through the years, I just realized that's what the answer is, right? Like, you can't just consume a bunch of cannabis and fix yourself. You have to consume cannabis and then do other things.
It's a tool.
Every podcast we do, we talk about it. It's a tool, and it is a tool for a million different things, right? Depending on your condition. But you have to put in that work. Like everybody says, you can't just smoke a blunt or take a hit of a vape pen and think your anxiety, your depression, your PTSD is going to go away. You have to eat halfway decent. You have to exercise. You have to work on your mental health. But it is the tool that can get a lot of people there.
100%. And I think the magazine, the goal is to help people understand that. Because the most challenging thing, in my opinion, when you start to use cannabis, is to figure out what you're supposed to do. And
you're supposed to feel like.
Yeah. And it's not even, I realize it's not what I feel like, it's what I don't feel anymore. So I don't feel the heaviness in my chest. I don't feel like if you're using cannabis recreationally, I think you're looking for some kind of effect. When you're using it medicinally, you're looking for things to disappear, right? The heaviness in my chest is gone. The thoughts that I can't control. When I hone in on those things, then I realize like how much it is benefiting me versus chasing some effect.
And how long did it take you, since you were relatively, I guess, a new cannabis user later in life, right?
Yeah.
How long did it take you to kind of hone in on, I mean, when people are entering the world of cannabis and they're looking, they come to the dispensary and they look at our chalkboard, we have, you know, 60 different kinds of ace of flower, indica, mm-hmm. sativa, hybrid. So how long did it take you to kind of hone in to something that worked
so
for
like
you?
The first 5 or so years was all like
street weed. Yeah,
so
no clue what
you know
you're getting,
how you
right?
hone in on that. Yeah. Oh, that just gave me a panic attack. I don't know. Not this stuff
no
again.
More of that. Yeah.
Yeah, like, and you know, none of the names probably were the same, but I would say in this last like year and a half since I've been a patient, that's been it. And so I've learned from others, learned from the events that we've had, talked to people. I mean, I think that's why the community gets strong. We have to learn from one another. Like, that is our best resource, is one another.
There's new research out there, right? So just like anecdotal experiences that people have from walks of life trying to treat different things is the only way we can really learn.
Dr. Hoffman always talks about how cannabis is the most autonomous medicine. Like, you have to keep track of your dosing, you have to track everything yourself. You get to go pick your own medicine, which is really unique. And a lot of our patients feel empowered that they get to come in and get to choose it. But in the beginning, a lot of them feel very, very overwhelmed because there's so many of our people that they're not looking for that psychoactivity.
Yeah.
And for us to be able to say, you know, if they come in and they'll say something like, well, I've been on really heavy pain medicine for the last 9 years. I've chronic this, chronic that. I want something for the pain, but I don't want to get high. And you're like, like, that's going to be tough, because if we're going to go after and you have this dependency / tolerance towards, you know, opiates, then for us to crack that pain for you is probably going to take something that's going to create a high level of psychoactivity. And we have two options. We have one, we can try that route and see if your body, you know, gets accustomed to it. I'm amazed at somehow how fastly folks' tolerance levels ramp up and their body's endocannabinoid system adjusts because they know that they need it. Kids especially, you know, we had some kids that we've had to start on THC. And it's nerve-wracking because we care very much about this particular patient outcome. And, you know, we hear like the first night he felt stoned, he's sitting on a couch. But like by night 4, he was doing his typical evening activities. But when he woke up in the morning, this is one particular case that we had. He had really muscle spasms that were crazy. And in the evening in particular, there wasn't an evening where his sheets would stay on the bed, right? Just constantly going. His mom comes in when he starts his THC, CBD regimen, and the sheets are on the bed, right? He slept through the night. He didn't tear them off. It's weird the benchmarks that our patients set for themselves and for each other. But this community is needed. It's absolutely needed until we can bridge the research, until at the dispensary level, I would argue that we're as good as any dispensary in the country at dosing, but we're still using what we know from our small dispensary and our small data for dosing. We don't have double blind clinical data that was done in 13 different dispensaries with a patient population of 10,000 people. And until we have that, we're dependent upon our communities. And like, another thing that we reference a lot is like, you know, if when a parent comes to us, we're the first ones to say, look, we got more experience than anybody else around here in helping you out. But if you really want to get into the details, find a mom whose kid has a similar condition with you, and she'll blow us out of the water.
Yeah.
Because it's her kid. And she knows exactly, you know, Riley's, you know, Jay and Riley are a great example. We've had a really great relationship with them for a long time. But the stuff that Jay knows about Riley is not something that any neurologist knows. It's not something that any cardiologist or any specialist knows, but she knows it because it's her daughter and she's got a vested interest in doing it. But it's because she reached out to moms that came before her in Colorado and Washington State. So the fact that, you know, this magazine and the community that you're building is there, I truly find it very important. And it's a lifestyle magazine. It serves two purposes. I mean, I think there's that sense of community, but we talk a lot about breaking the stigma. And I think when they see professionals like myself and Chuck and Dr. Hoffman and yourself come from the professional world where, if I'm not mistaken, and you were using some cannabis when you were doing marketing in professional world, right?
Yeah, absolutely. 100% was it
We're out there, corporate America, whether you want it or not.
Whether you guys want it or not.
Here are the truths that I found. Everybody uses cannabis. Yep. Like, it's crazy. I think, especially in the business world, once I stood up and became open about it, it is hysterical to me. People like slide to the side, like,
God.
They're like, I do too. And not everyone, like, you know, there's a wave but of how people
not,
are able to.
There's not a stereotype mold, right?
Like, no, none whatsoever.
If you
whatsoever.
Look at our patient population, there's something for everyone, like everyone.
And that's what, like, you notice in the events, like in any cannabis event, really. Man, it is such a diverse group of people. Everyone comes sporting their own style. Everyone just comes as them. And then that's when the magic starts to happen. I will be very excited when people can share in Maryland. I think that takes like cannabis use to the next level. However, people still standing in a circle, just all smoking their own joint or hitting their own bowl, is still enough to create a bond that is, man, just so powerful and miraculous to see. Because I promise you, these groups are not the groups you see in other places, right? Even in business, because businesses seem to all look and feel kind of the same. Not these events, not the people.
There's
that
no
you see.
Monocentric, like, no. No matter who you are, chances are you'll feel eclectic. And I remember, like, before we opened our doors, going out and, like, and they're like, what kind of people are going to be coming through your door? I'm like, they're going to look like you. They're going to be, like, normal people. They could be your boss or they could be the
your
guy sweeping the floor.
Yeah.
Your grandmother. Like, they're going to look like everything. And then we actually open our door and, like, there's the BMW that's $80,000. And then there's the guy who's got his, you know, the big picture. It's just everything. It really is cool. And it's funny for me now, the continuous evolution of the predominant folks in our community that are popping into my dispensary.
And
they're finally starting to feel comfortable in this town as being a cardholder, because we've done a really good job. Like, it was really important for me to bring cannabis to Salisbury in the right way.
Yeah.
I love Salisbury. I didn't grow up here, but this is like, If there's ever a chance for me to be mayor of Salisbury, it's something I may look into, because I love this place so much.
You got my vote.
And I knew cannabis was going to come. Someone was going to bring it there. I wanted to be the one that did it the right way. So we got letter of recommendation from the mayor in our application. We told the chief of police 3 years ago that we were going to try to do this. We made sure that the community at large, A, wasn't surprised by this, and B, was going to give us as much buy-in as they could. And, you know, within our first year, the Chamber of Commerce gave us Small Business of the Year.
Wow,
we really got
congrats.
A lot of recognition from the city and letters from the representatives, and we kind of broke that stigma. And I think that as more folks like us come out and put our necks out there, it moves our cause forward. But as you just brought up, we were talking before we started filming, is we really need that next level. Like, yeah, it's one thing as a dispensary owner, but you just need to be the guy that works for the city, and you just need to be.
Yeah.
We need more people to just put their hands in the air and say, I don't want to be discriminated against. I'm a good parent. I'm a good employee, I'm a good productive citizen, and I use cannabis, here I am, kind of deal.
It's still very divided. Like, you'll see, like, you know, even in the influencer and advocate world, maybe a social media profile that's dedicated to that, and maybe not so much, right? That it just can't be. Like, stigma will not end until every single person, whether your paycheck is this or $1 million, you have to stand up and say, because if something goes wrong, you're part of the issue for not saying you use it, right? And there's power in that. Like,
the biggest,
it just happens.
That's been the biggest changer in the community is they start seeing faces that they recognize, and they can't, if they're honest with themselves, then they have to take the picture that they had in their head and say, okay, that's not right.
Yep.
And then they replace it with this new person, which might be their relative and the opioid epidemic as horrendous as it has been, is one of the best juxtapositions to cannabis.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because if tough. You're going to be intellectually honest, then you can't say it's the same thing. You yeah. can't say that opioid use and cannabis use are the same thing. And as cannabis proves itself to be very effective in the opioid epidemic, either in proactively using as a mechanism for pain before they even get prescribed an opiate, or as an exit mechanism when someone already develops a dependency on opioids, you know, getting the cannabis into play and destigmatized out of physicians' heads and out of the community leaders and our congressmen and the folks that are making the decisions, it's so important.
Yeah. And it's this.
Oh, wait. No, I was just going to ask, like, along those same lines, like, since you started the journey with Mary mm-hmm. Jane, I guess almost at the beginning of the industry's yeah. been up and running for, call it 18 months now, right? How has it evolved? Like, from the at the beginning, it was kind of, I kind of feel like people were still hiding their yeah. stories and stuff. And I'm sure now that, you know, people like you and us as the dispensary and everybody in the industry is more and more open, more people see it. And I guess it has to be way easier for you to get people to share their stories now.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a yes and no at the same time. So have you ever read the book? It's by, dang it, I'm going to forget. Start with Why. It talks about like early adopters. So in every like movement, you have early adopters and there's like five stages and then you have the people at the end. The early adopters, that's all of us, right? We're ready and not that it wasn't hard, but we were the first ones to stand in line to say, yes, me. Kind of like the first people who will wait in line for an iPhone when it's 30 degrees and they'll wait 6 hours. Those are the early adopters. We're now like in phase 2 and 3 of this, right? So people are gaining courage to do this. And so it does take some coaxing to say to someone like, okay, so you're going to admit to everybody that you know, in their mind, they're not using the word cannabis because all they hear is their friends are now, no, I smoke weed. And so they're going to think that I am lazy and I am this. And so then we have to talk through this. I mean, every time we feature someone, everybody has to have this kind of talk to be like, it's going to be okay. You are successful in your life. And so when they find this part out about it, yeah, you may take some heat, but then you just keep pointing to the fact like, but I do this. Yeah. You didn't know about this before. Like, why all of a
sudden? What changes about me now that I smoke cannabis? Now that you know it, because I've always done it, and I'm still the same person, right?
I went to our county executive, and I had a business where I did like payment processing, and it was my customer. And I basically said, look, we've done business for 3 years. Like, you know me, and now I'm doing this. I know you're super conservative, but, like, are you going to judge me differently for, like, do you remember your, like, coming out moment?
Oh, yeah. It was scary.
Yeah. I remember, like, well, for us, there was actually an article written about Dr. Hoffman that wasn't supposed to come out without our blessing. And then all of a sudden she had like 300 likes and next thing you know, there's 30,000 views of an article and like everyone knew what we were doing.
Yeah. you just sat there for a minute, like, didn't you? Like,
It was pretty wild. But I remember like we didn't like, so we were approved. First off, before we got approved, we didn't say anything to anybody. Unless
smart
like,
move.
Yeah, that actually turned out to be a smart move because everyone that grandstanded in the area and promised that they were going to like rebuild schools and do all this crazy stuff, none of them got applications. And none of them got licenses.
Yeah.
So we just kind of stayed under the radar and we didn't make a lot of noise until we even there was a while after we got approved. But I just remember people looking at me like I had like five heads and there was a lot of like, wow, this is what you're doing. But as it's going on, now those same people now are, I'm not a hero, but you know what I mean? Like they look at me at a completely different level because we've accomplished what we set out to do. And I think it paves the way now when I'm at a chamber meeting and the architect comes up to me and he's looking around his shoulder, he still does that. There's still this stigma, right?
Oh,
and we have
sure.
patients that they request a plain brown paper bag instead of our PAH bags because they don't want a logo on it.
Yeah.
We have guys that park in neighboring businesses down the street and so their work truck isn't seen in front of our facility.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's still a lot of, and we, in our dispensary in particular, it's not very glamorous. I'll be the first to admit, but it's great for privacy. We have a double basically check-in system so that once you get to the waiting room, if you're in the waiting room, you're a patient. It's patient only because we want to make sure that we catering to those folks. I mean, I don't want to chastise someone for not feeling confident enough to be open about their cannabis use, although I do find it problematic.
I do think their time will come, though. Like, I mean, one of the, our second issue, I spoke to a guy who was so excited to share his story. As he's telling it to me, though, I'm hearing where he works, and I'm like,
are you sure?
Like, let's talk this through, because I have a legal team that we run this stuff by, right? So let's talk this through with your work. You say they don't care, but we know that they really do. And let's just say someone found this magazine and they saw you in it. What do you think?
In HR, in a different context, in a report.
Yeah, so his story didn't get shared. I mentioned him in my publisher's note because it's just not his time. We want people who can stand up, say their name. It doesn't mean it's not going to be scary, right? Like, there are people who've shared their story who could have lost their jobs. Nothing happened. But that was their coming out moment, and that was their time. And everyone who has come out in any way, shape, or form, it's only their time and their time alone. What we need is everyone who's already out to share their stories and to keep talking about it, because it's not just once. Like, I will have to share and will love to share my anxiety story over and over again, because that is how this movement will go. We know in marketing, like, it's so hard to get the word out. Like, you get shut down at every turn. You get, like,
there's no advert, you can't push a Facebook post. Everything has to be organic. Yeah, so we do stuff like this, right?
Yeah, exactly.
This is why we have this podcast, and for many reasons. One is to get the word out and to be able to have a place where patients and people that are interested in what's going on behind the scenes have a place to go, because there's not a lot of places that they can go. You can't openly talk in Facebook. You can't openly on Instagram post things. It's very problematic for someone who's looking to push content out because it's still federally illegal.
Oh, yeah.
Essentially, a publication, advertising, marketing agency. Do you run into the same issues too with advertising?
Yeah, I mean, in the very beginning,
even though you're not even selling product.
Yeah, so I mean, in the very beginning, every processor shut us down. Lots of issues with like Instagram. In fact, even so much so, like 3 weeks ago, my Instagram was deleted again. However, it was reinstated. Because it was deleted in error.
Good for you.
That's a trophy to put in the case.
We're still operating on its secondary Instagram page because the first one was not given back to us.
Yeah, so all of it. I mean, they see no difference between me never touching the product and being a license holder. So it just doesn't. And the community sometimes helps perpetuate that. I'm sure you guys have seen that amongst it as well.
So once
we get our own stuff together, then...
Glad you bought that out, because there is a huge amount, and we've talked about it before, not only on the podcast, but on other areas. Like, it's a responsibility of us in the industry to make sure it's the right information, it's put in the right light, we're doing it professionally, because if not, it's only hurting the cause that we're all trying to go after.
When we see new advertising regulations, and then you kind of hear the story about, you got every politician from Maryland driving down to Crisfield, and they drive by a billboard that's got Adam passing Eve a joint.
Yeah.
I would argue that on the Maryland's Eastern Shore, God's country, that maybe that's not the best foot forward.
I mean, I find it, as a marketer, so damn creative. I love it. But as someone who, like, we're looking at stigma ending.
Yep.
Those are the types of things. And that's why I stay away from drippy fonts. You won't see people who aren't in Maryland, because we have to stay very crystal clear on what each individual missions are.
So let's go all the way back to where we started from.
Yeah.
Give me a little bit about your background in marketing, and then give us a little bit about how you're applying that vision, and like, you've highlighted it, but summarize really the message that you want to convey with Mary Jane.
Absolutely. So I have a kind of interesting career. I started multifamily housing. So if you think apartment communities, I was a leasing consultant, worked my way up, and just found I was really good in sales. So because of that, when you can do something well, sometimes you get asked to teach people to do that. And so I was a corporate trainer for about 5 years with a big real estate company in Maryland. Multifamily housing, so apartments.
Well, and so in you that, play the guessing game?
Yeah, do you want to?
Is it Ryan Holmes?
It's not. So
Pazito?
Ding, 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 ding. Yep, Zuno. So I was with
there's some people there.
Yes, yeah, I learned probably the best customer service expectations, how to connect with people. I learned the quality of what a CEO is from Tom Bizzuto, a very honorable man. So I learned a lot of things in that. And really my communication with people, that's where I learned, like to be able to teach someone a skill, but also understand where they are at their skill level, right? Because not everyone gets something all the time. So then I just kind of like went around in there. But right before I left the corporate world, I worked for CoStar, which is an internet company, and it's a real estate information company. So I got to see how a number seven company in the world for in innovation worked the internet, and got to see, man, the world is yours if you understand a few things when it relates to how to get attention. But what I noticed is attention is all well and good, but there has to be some authenticity behind it. And you can't just connect online. It just doesn't work that way. Like it is, I think there are people who can survive on just an Instagram account. I give them all the props in the world because I think it is far harder to keep that attention than what you guys are doing, even what I'm doing, right? Because we have something tangible. And humans' interest is, what, 15 seconds?
I mean, that's why people love Instagram, right? Because it's 15 seconds. Yeah. But like you said, you scroll, 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 and it's kind of lost in space, where you have things like Mary Jane. It's an actual publication that's archived.
You hold it.
Referenced, you hold it. It's tangible.
Is it actionable? Is it something you're going to remember? Is it just something in the mass of our heads, which is like floating billboards now? You're right.
The goal is with a story is, you know, we want to take the reader on a journey. And our like key demographic isn't people who already use cannabis. Like our minds are made up, right? I should say they're like secondary. We want people to read it and then be inspired to share their story. But our first person we want to talk to and for them to read is someone who has a negative opinion about cannabis or no opinion at all. Because we design each story as a hero's journey, right? Everybody, if you give the right writer that asks the right questions, can pull that out of someone. And so we want to make a reader laugh. We want them to cry. And we want them to think. And then we want them to act. And so every story that we write, we go into that with that. In all of these stories, we can create that arc for someone to read. And that's when you start to change people's minds. They have to have a physical emotion, something that makes them change the way they think about something. And then as they're holding the magazine, that physical touch then solidifies that moment for them. And then they have it again. And then they meet someone else, or they meet someone who shared their story. And we're not saying one story changes someone's mind, because there will be. However, seven or eight times.
What's that reinforcement?
Yep. Someone's like, oh, I know someone who uses cannabis, and this helped so-and-so.
When we created this fake patient persona, I did my mind when I built our dispensary model. I knew that folks like me were coming in, right?
Yeah.
I don't have to worry about them. But I wanted a 65-year-old woman who got Lyme disease, who had never been in a dispensary and never used cannabis a day in her life, to be able to walk in, get information, and feel empowered and feel comfortable to go through our whole process. And I knew that if I could capture her, this fake patient, then everybody else would be fine.
Yeah.
That was the one I needed to cater to. I don't need to cater to... I constantly break our patient base. This is not factually stated. This is Anthony Darby's patient metrics. But we have about 20.
Zero statistics.
Zero statistics. Right now, Corp Paul,
I mean, that's what the US
rolling,
is run
on. Rolling
so
over
good.
Me. Like, he's an idiot. He's an idiot. But they gave me a microphone. I'm going to talk into it. I've used this for a long time, though, and I think that the numbers are fairly accurate. And about 20% of our patients, cannabis is truly life-changing. These are epileptic patients. We have patients that have honestly have gotten their hearing back. We have some really amazing cases, and these folks would almost die if they didn't have cannabis. We have about 20% of our patients that I would say are overindulging. If there was a recreational market, they probably wouldn't be medical patients. But I feel that the substances within our dispensary are much safer than most of what else is at their disposal. So we take care of those folks as well. I think there's 60% of their patients, and I'd put myself in this category, that are used as a wellness tool. Yeah. If you took it away from me, I'm not going to die tomorrow. But I can tell you that my mental health and my ability to be proactive in this world is enabled by cannabis. I've gone without, I've gone with, and now that we have all these great lab results and really understanding the type of medicine that I'm taking, how I'm applying it. So I'm not just grabbing a bag of weed and saying, well, is this going to give me anxiety? Is this going to knock, you know, what's this going to do? The cannabis has been an enabler as a wellness tool. And I think that more and more folks will be using cannabis as we get, as the population gets older, maybe aging population, as folks become less and less likely to be excited about getting prescription pills. You know, before it was, hey, great news, I don't have to go and lose any weight. I got this new blood pressure medicine and I don't have to worry about my blood pressure.
Yeah.
You know, my knee's bothering me and I could try to start walking and I could try to start making lifestyle changes, but I'm just going to take this new pill my doc gave me for inflammation. Like, I think we're saying those have consequences. And eventually, if you use that methodology, you're going to have 13 pills. You're going to be spending $1,000 a month and you're not going to feel good. So look at different wellness tools. It's not just cannabis. It's diet. It's sleep. It's music. You talked about creating a community. You guys do some events, right?
Yeah.
And you mentioned a writing event, right?
Yeah.
So taking something that is traditionally therapeutic, incorporating cannabis within that therapeutic activity, and really getting, it's almost like a 1+1=3. Like if your body or endocannabinoid system seeks some relief from cannabis use, but now there's this next tool. Now your body has got some relief. What are you going to do to stimulate your mind or to bring your mind at peace? Writing is a great tool. Let's put these two together. And you guys are putting you have a class like that coming soon?
Let's get in and talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So I agree. The next step to all of this, we now have access to cannabis, is now to understand how to use it as a wellness tool and to ensure that people are using the systems to get them through, especially for that 60% of the population, right? Because I would think most of us are using them for mental things, right? Like mental health, anxiety, depression, all of those things. So because of that, my focus is to help people begin that journey. How do we begin wellness? And for me, obviously I have a magazine. Something that's therapeutic for me is writing, as it is for all of my writers. And so they have noticed, as they've interviewed people, there's healing that happens when we tell our story. And most people don't sing because they don't think they're a singer, and most people don't write because they don't think they're a writer. But everyone's a singer and everyone's a writer. What we're doing is we're bringing a class that's going to teach the basics of creative writing, which is not really a huge deal, right? Like pen, paper, question, write. But also incorporating cannabis and talking about some of those terps that help with the creativity. Again, understanding everyone's different. So, yeah, we'll use the most commonality and then talk about it. But those are the types of events that I want to start seeing more and more of, because it takes it to the next level. I think that's when cannabis starts to heal people. There's nothing wrong with standing around and everyone consuming cannabis and talking about it. But I do think that it changes the human when we start to learn coping mechanisms. We're learning other tools. And that knowledge actually is what kind of brought everything full circle for me with my health. Wasn't enough just to consume cannabis, because when I started, I got off of medicine. But 5 years later, I was back on everything and being diagnosed diabetic and all of these things. Why? Because all I ever did was use cannabis. I didn't meditate, I didn't exercise, I didn't eat healthy. Over the last 2 years, as that's all been incorporated, that's when the magic has happened. Man, and over-medicating is easy for everyone to do, because you know why? I don't want to get up and stretch because it's just, I don't have time. My back hurts. So I'm just going to consume more today to get through the day. I understand how this happens.
Yeah, no, very much so. And we both come from a sports-minded background where we would like to incorporate, you know, yoga and more action items, to your point, because I believe that for me, especially, really the same exact story, right? You know, we work a 12 or 13 hour day. Yeah. We've got all these dispensary problems, and you can say, okay, I could try to run, or I could try to go to the gym, or I could try to Or I can just mask this problem tonight with a couple extra bong hits.
Yep.
And sometimes that's easier. And sometimes, honestly, that's great because you don't have the time to always to do that in a busy life. But from a long-term strategy perspective, that's not a winner. And I think so much of folks that have tried cannabis and haven't gotten the relief that they were looking for, I wonder if they could have seen that magic recipe that you found for you. Said, well, what if I did this and then maybe got on a bike and just rode 5 miles in a park stoned because I feel good.
Yeah.
My knee doesn't hurt. I'm uplifted. Oh, by the way, now I rode for 5 miles. So my legs got used and my atrophy's going down. There's all these like...
I'm not really looking forward to that pizza as much as I am like a salad afterwards or something. It's like whole mindset and mentality.
Right? My friends are like so confused how I don't have the munchies. Like they're just like, we know you consume all day and you don't. I'm like, well, there's this terpene humulin, but also that's never my intent, right? Like, because when I do, it's to do this or I'm not just sitting around the house like,
I got
popping food.
Yeah, I found a cool, this is kind of a side note, but it goes towards the same thing about using cannabis as a tool. So I wrote a blog post a while ago. I don't even know if we did it, but I was reading a bunch of stuff online and like you can figure out like it was something to trigger like creativity, right? So there's different ways that you can go. And there's, so if you go on a run and you drink some coffee and consume a small amount of cannabis, like the chemical reaction within your head,
right?
In that order.
It's actually a great
post.
That's what I, wait, say the order again.
So if you go for, the way that I've done it is I've gone for like a 20-minute run, not like balls to the wall, but like to push yourself where you get like a good workout, you're energized, you're breathing hard, and drink a small like 8-ounce cup of coffee and then consume the cannabis after that.
Oh, I bet you.
So,
Stardog
particularly. So I use, right? So like this is one of those things. It's like stories. So I use Stardog, which is like really creative for me. I haven't seen it in a while. I'd like to first come back out on the market. If anybody's listening,
plug.
Talking to you, Geely.
But I mean, it's crazy. So I'll write like a to-do list beforehand so I don't waste the energy and the time.
Smart.
Right. And so when I'm done the small amount of cannabis, like I got my to-do list and it's just like you're in the zone, you're focused, your brain, you don't have the anxiety of, oh, I got 500,000 things to do, which is triggers anxiety and depression and everything else. So you, fundamentally, you go down the list and you look at your watch and you haven't looked up, but everything's done. And it's like the opposite of what the stigma is about cannabis.
Yeah.
Right? It is the exact opposite. I use cannabis for the opposite reason of what the stigma is. Like, it's cool to be able to say that finally.
My personal story is this, the day that we opened up is the last day I took an Adderall or had a sip of alcohol. So I use really heavy sativas in the morning to replace Adderall, and I find that my aggression and my attitude is so much better than it used to be. And then in the evening, if I need that relaxing, I'll go with a heavy indica. My body has really appreciated the fact that I'm not feeding it amphetamines and that I'm not giving it alcohol.
And the bioaccumulation from Adderall and all that stuff and the come down off of.
Yeah,
you get like a great few hours, but I think, man, the cost of it is huge.
It's huge. So it's really interesting, you know, to see. And we're like, you know, we're pioneering, right? Like I've had a year and a half of knowing what I'm taking. Like I can't imagine in 5 years. I look back and I'm like, man, I can't believe I used to do that. I bet some of the things that we do will seem really crazy and archaic because we'll know so much more about the endocannabinoid system.
Oh, for
sure. We'll know that like ibuprofen, once you get past 80 milligrams, you're just wasting everything else. You know, we'll learn bioavailability and all these new things. So I'm really excited for the continuation of cannabis and wellness to cross paths. I mean, for us, it's what we believe. I mean, I think the future is kind of this like idea of a wellness campus where we're changing diets and activity levels, and we're really looking at a holistic approach for our patients. And I think, you know, people will be more apt to go that route than just start taking a bunch of pills.
Oh, I agree. And I'm in like maybe 120 days ago, I started working with a holistic wellness coach. So 2 years ago, maybe 2.5 years ago, I was diagnosed with diabetes. I was almost 300 pounds, really got a huge wake-up call. Obviously, cannabis wasn't saving me alone. And really started to work on my fitness first, started to exercise. It took a year of straight exercise before diet came on board. Once food became a focus, that is when my health drastically changed. So reverse diabetes in 90 days. My doctor was shocked.
That's phenomenal.
That's amazing. Congrats. That's
Thank
awesome.
Thank you. could not believe, looked into cannabis strains that they have been saying, like THV, all of those. So use that tool, but then also food and exercise. All of that started to take effect, but then I started to notice another area that was causing things, and that's your mental health, looking back, seeking to get closure on those items. And so I have realized, like, that is the journey that all cannabis users need to be on. Cannabis will help them fix all of that. It will help them get through what trauma. It can help you when you have your aches and pains from working out. It can even help the mental. So I went from eating so much sugar and carbs, my favorite thing in the world, to keto, less than 20 grams of carbs a day, which is 4 cups of spinach and 1/4 cup of almonds. I ate nothing but meat and protein, or meats and fats after that. And so it was such a huge shift, but I was able to use things like sativas to curb my appetite, to keep me focused on other things. And at, late at night, when it was so consuming that all I wanted to do was eat, you know what you do? You just smoke a heavy indica. And what are you going to do? Not move and go to sleep. Yeah, so I was able to even help me get through some of the mental stresses of trying to get healthy by using it.
That's an amazing story. You mentioned, like, you know, diabetes. I constantly motherfuck sugar on this thing, because for me, carbs and sugar are like my weakness. That'll cause a 20-pound weight swing in 90 days. Yeah. It fuels my anxiety and depression, and I find myself going through these ebbs and flows. And knowing that alcohol is sugar-based always kind of played in my head, like, okay, if I have all these issues with sugar, and alcohol is going to be playing in that somehow as well. And we get into diet. I think a lot of folks that have or are struggling with anxiety and depression, I would ask you, you know, what does your diet look like? How much caffeine are you consuming? How much sugar are you consuming? Because
high blood sugar triggers anxiety.
Yeah.
Like anything when your body is even out of homeostasis, like you get triggered, your body's trying to correct it. And so especially if you're already anxious, you are going to get it. I don't even need to test my blood sugar. I can tell if I've eaten something bad. I can tell. I just start to get anxious, like my body tells me.
For the longest time, that was my coping mechanism.
Oh, well, for sure. Ben and Jerry's Cherry Garcia.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, oh, like I'm had a rough day at work, and I could work out, or I could just take an extra bong hit and walk upstairs and eat Ben and Jerry's. I mean, there is that part of cannabis. I mean, if you want to go that route, it's available, but that is not what I would recommend for anyone. And that's not
everybody, like, has a decision to make on their own, right? Yeah. Use cannabis as a tool to help make.
And some days you may just need to, because there are still times where even knowing how I will feel afterwards, I will still choose to do something.
I went to National Ice Cream Day yesterday. Oh, I knew how I was going to feel.
I did too.
I knew exactly what was going to happen to me. I
on the boardwalk, some custard.
But I didn't care. I didn't care yesterday.
I ate a cheesesteak yesterday for the first time in a while.
My God.
It was fabulous. And afterwards, all I want to do is go to sleep.
I mean, that's just it, right? Yeah. Like your body just, it knows.
There was a time where my body's appetite for glutton for punishment was way higher. I mean, the amount of alcohol and food I could throw in it, and it would allow me to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and just go like nothing happened. And
now it's like,
I eat the wrong thing for dinner, and it's like, do not pass go, do not collect $200. Isn't it, like done.
Once you figure it out, and I mean, and that's why I was raised, right? Like sick mom, poor family, bad food. Yep. And that's, I mean, that is how it goes. And so you get those coping mechanisms. Like, I couldn't believe, I didn't realize why I felt so bad. And I didn't even realize how bad I felt until I felt good. And I was like, wow.
Like, first time I ever quit fast food.
And that's a game changer.
I ate fast food and, like, got completely sick. And it was like, wait, let me think about this. How bad was my body that I wasn't getting sick every time I ate this? Because my body was just getting conditioned to be able to process this horrible food. And like, it's a topic for another podcast, but it's I love hearing that successful stories of folks that looked at this whole picture and have had, and you know, you look great and it looks like your lifestyle is much better, more beneficial because you've taken these changes. So and it's not, you know, you don't have to be a supermodel, you don't have to be in the gym 7 days a week. It's about instrumenting small changes and then being consistent with those changes. And then a few weeks later, you look back and say, all of a sudden, I'm not diabetic anymore, yeah. right? You didn't know day 10 of your 90-day journey that you were going to be able to kick it that fast, but you stayed on a program and were able to have an amazing result.
There's a great book called The Habit of Change that really, I mean, there's a formula for change. And so in every kind of big area, there's a keystone habit. And that habit is, if you nail that habit, all other habits are easier in that. So in health and wellness, exercise is the keystone habit. And so it doesn't matter if you eat healthy, if you can.
Show up to the gym 5 days.
Show up to the gym. Just get there. Stay 10 minutes. Come back the next day. Keep doing it. Keep doing it. It took from March 10th until December 19th when I changed my diet. I still ate all the delicious things. I still lost weight. I still started to feel better. But then one day your body gets to a point where it's just like, no, we need different food. And the habit was that much easier. I can't imagine going that restrictive of a diet to get away from diabetes if I hadn't exercised.
Yeah, because at that point, you're motivated, right? You're going to the gym, and now you want these other additional results, and you realize that, okay, for me to get those results, my body has, I have to change my diet because I can't keep putting the same fuel in and expecting to get to a certain point. But your body at that point, it's craving. Like Chuck said, like, it's amazing. If I exercise, my body craves protein and salads and good food. And when I'm lethargic and do nothing, my body craves sugar and shit. So,
and for like people listening who aren't to the point where they can move or they have something that inhibits the way that they move, you can manifest the same physical emotions and feelings by visualizing physical activity. So you can, in your mind's eye, go for a run. And you can visualize your hands and your feet moving and starting to do that and get those same benefits, because it has been shown, and you will, if you read that book again and again, you can never throw a football, but you can think about throwing a football and throw it the first time and be better than the other person, just because our brains are so powerful. And so if you can't visualize it.
It's a really, really bold concept.
Mm-hmm. And what was the book called again?
It's The Habit of Change. Yep. And so it is like your mind is the most powerful. And I think that's why cannabis is the only medicine that you can take to unlock and help those types of things. Man, like you said, you take Stardog and the creativity just flows. Can you imagine if you were visualizing, you had a big day, and you visualized while after consuming Stardog start to finish, how your day went. When you go and do it, you will be exceptional that day.
I do that, a lot of that. I mean, I think you're talking, when we created this, we had to visualize so much of what we were going to do before we were going to do it, because we had to, right? Yeah. No one's ever done it before. I had no one to look to before. And I think the visualization, the mindfulness that cannabis brings us is something we talk about a lot, of being able to move out from the moment itself and then be able to have these visions and to be able to kind of conceptually walk through, almost like a guided meditation.
Yeah, because like for me, because people just get, especially this day and age, right? Everybody's so busy, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, everybody's on social, everybody's mind's just in it. But the ability to have cannabis and detach yourself from just being in it all day and kind of take that higher level view is just something I think that is just wildly beneficial. It's kind of what you were talking about. I think it's super big, and I know it's helped me a tremendous amount.
Yeah, just take a step back for a minute.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks
and sharing
for
your story.
Me.
Anything else? How can people find you? Tell them.
You can find me Jill Mary Jane Mag on Instagram. Everything else is kind of getting up and running as we rebrand, but that's the best place to look out. And I'm on Facebook, Jillian Franquelli. You can also follow me.
If there are patients or anybody really, patients in the industry that want to share their story, how would they go about sharing that with you guys?
So you can send a DM on Instagram, or you can email me, which is probably the best, at jill@createarippleeffect.com. So effective.
We'll share those credentials when we share the podcast.
Please do. We want, and I'm very focused on all the areas surrounding the main parts of the state, because this is where everyone's real cool about cannabis in Baltimore. We need to start coming out to areas where registration isn't as high, where stigma is so deep, where we can start to get those communities very strong so they can stand on their own and kind of propel this movement everywhere.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jill.
Thanks.